You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Matt Migaki, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you've ever wanted to sneak backstage and share a beer with one of your favorite musicians, well, Vox and Hops is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I had an amazing conversation with Morgan Lander and SJ Jones about Kitty Pig. There is this episode and over 450 other ones to help you enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. So what are you waiting for? It's time to become a Vox and Hops head. Cheers.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe.
Hello and welcome to the Delirious Nomads podcast. I'm your host, Matt Bacon. Chris could not make it this week, unfortunately. However, we do have one of my favorite people in the New York metal scene, Dave Hill, of Witch Taint, Painted Doll, actor, comedian extraordinaire. Seems to like keep showing up in my favorite TV shows very weirdly. Wrote the Last Week Tonight theme. What other weird credit should I be giving you? You wrote the Last Week Tonight theme with the guy from Autopsy.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you just wrote it on your own?
The John Oliver Show song is, that's my band Valley Lodge. So that's just a song that I wrote.
Oh.
And then they were like, oh, we want to use this as our theme song. So we just worked out really nicely. Luck. Good luck. Yeah. And then I painted Doll with Chris Reifert and from Autopsy, of course. And what else? Oh, I did Metal Grasshopper with Phil Anselmo. Oh, like 10 years ago now, more than 10 years.
That's wild.
Which is on YouTube. What else? I just joined Niflheim. No, just kidding. That's my metal dream.
I saw Niflheim a few weeks ago.
Where?
In Vienna.
Oh my gosh, I'm so jealous. I've never seen them live.
It was sick. We were like hanging out backstage doing like the old school black metal guy thing. And they have like that stance that the old black metal guys have.
Yo, with their arms.
Yeah, like with their arms out.
I love it.
You know, they've got like the beers and they're like making jokes and you're just like, yeah, this is what it's about, is, you know, talking about war with Niflheim.
Oh man, I'm jealous. They're the best at metal, probably.
Is that your take? Is that Niflheim are the best at metal?
It's one of the best. I think they're just doing it right. And it kills me that I've never seen them live. I was going to see them. They kept trying to come to St. Vitus, and then because of the pandemic, it kept getting canceled, I think. And then I was going to go see him in Mexico City, and I didn't pull the trigger. I'm not pathetic. It shall happen, though.
So you've always really struck me as someone with a really deep taste in black metal. Where did that come from?
I think initially, you know, I became interested in it. Just, I like anything where people take things too far and take things really seriously. So I admittedly got interested in it because I was just hearing like the insanity. And then from that, the thing with black metal, like all music, most of it, you got to just keep moving. But then you hone in on a few things that are great. And I think it's, you know, I think it's one of the few subgenres of metal or whatever, where it sort of like transcends metal, and you're where you're like, am I even listening to metal anymore? Or am I listening to like, I don't know, it goes into a whole other, you know, like I really like Vemod a lot. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. They're on Prophecy. I love that band. I like getting to work with them. Yeah.
You work with them?
Yeah.
They're one of the best ever. And that like they're to the point where you're like, I don't know. This is like goes beyond. Like I played them for a friend of mine. We were driving and I played it for her. And she was like she's not even into metal, but she was like, oh, I really like this. Like, and I'm like, yeah, because it like transcends black metal and metal in general. It's like kind of into its own thing.
Yeah. And I think that's really, I think that's a really important point. It's more about a larger mood. It's more about vibes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. When it gets to that point, like then it becomes something that everyone can relate to, you know, everyone feels like they're alone in a forest sometimes, you know?
It's a good pull quote for the title of the interview.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, probably half of what I say will be pull quote worthy, no doubt.
You are the most humble man in black metal.
Top three.
Okay. Right. So I had always wanted to ask you about that and that origin point, because that, I guess you must have been getting into that in like the early 90s.
I would say late 90s. I was probably like late to the party, I guess, in terms of, you know, Norwegian black metal. I was a few years too late, if you want to be really strict about it. The first wave, of course, I was on board with. But then, yeah, Norwegian, I was probably later 90s. And then, you know, I read Lords of Chaos when that came out, like a lot of people did, obviously. And then that's kind of how Witch Taint started, just because I was so entertained by all that. And then, so I started emailing first, like, black metal bands, and then I emailed a black metal label, and then that's kind of how that whole thing started.
Got out of hand. Do you want to tell that story real fast? Because I want to kind of tie into your comedy career, but I feel like the Witch Taint story is so hilarious and weird.
At the time, you know, it would have been, well, I guess it would have been like by this time, by the time I was doing the emails, was like started like 2002-03. And then I think in about 2004, you know, because I did it and then I stopped, but I was like truly just doing it for my own entertainment. I had no idea that anyone else would see this stuff. Like, it wasn't sure. Done like as a thing, like, oh, I'm gonna do this thing and people are gonna be into it. I wasn't thinking that at all, and I was just emailing pretending to be this teenager Lance from Witch Taint, who lived in Gary, Indiana with his mom. I would just send these emails, and then,
but who are you sending them to? Labels?
Yeah, well, I just went there, were, you know, the website Full Moon Productions, FMP666.com, yeah. Which I believe is like archive now or something.
Yes, probably.
But there was like a whole page on that website with just all these email addresses for bands. So I just started emailing bands, writing these stupid emails, you know, claiming to be the most extreme black metal musician of all time, who, you know, happened to live with his mom in Indiana. You know, most bands like would just write back once and tell me to fuck off or something. But I wrote to this, what I thought was the band Mysticum, but it turned out it was their label, Planet Satan Revolution. That guy wrote back like sort of this thoughtful email. And then we just kept corresponding. And I was telling him, you know, you should sign us to your label because, you know, all your bands are horrible and all this, and just being an idiot.
Sure.
And then I eventually made a demo. Wrote one song sort of on the spot with my friend John Kimbrough, sent that in, and the guy like sort of critiqued it. Actually, his critique was like really spot on. Like, he was, you know, kind of like, here's what sucks about this. It's just kind of like, I don't know. And so over the course, you know, this went on for like 6 months, and I started sending the emails to my buddy John, I mentioned, John Kimbrough, and then my friend David Jaffrey in LA. And so it was just sending it to them, and then they started sending it to other people. And, you know, eventually someone wanted to build a website with these emails on it. And once the emails, you know, the exchange had run its course, like, I said, you know, yeah, you can go ahead and do that. Cause, you know, they removed the guy's contact info. Cause I think, you know, the emails aren't, you know, it's not like the guy doesn't, he's just like a patient, thoughtful guy, like, and putting up with me, this idiot. Like, if it were this thing where it's like I'm making fun of this other guy and trying to make him look stupid, I wouldn't have wanted people to see that, nor would I have done that, you know, because I think, like, you know, the thing that with the emails is just that this guy is actually just kind of like putting up with this idiot, me. And that's what I think is funny about it.
He's like remarkably nice.
Yeah, he doesn't come off bad at all. Like, he comes off as just like a good guy. So in that way, I didn't think it was like, you know, I didn't think it was bad to share with people. So, but even that, like, I didn't expect it that many people to be interested in it. And it kind of like went all over the world really quickly. And You know, yeah, so it's just...
And if you want to read them, they're linked in the show notes.
There we go.
So let's talk about this, Ted. So this ties in, obviously, to your comedy career.
Mm-hmm.
How did that start? What fed into that?
How did the comedy career start?
Yeah, because, like, you go to Fordham, right?
Yeah.
And then were you going, doing stand-up there, or when did you start doing stand-up?
I'm a super late bloomer with comedy. I never planned to go into comedy, I think, you know, because I was, like, I went to Fordham in the Bronx, and I had a band there called Sons of Elvis, worst band name ever, or best band name ever, depending on how you look at it. And we got signed to Priority Records, like, right out of college, and, you know, had a record come out in the mid-90s, and video on MTV at 3 in the morning, and, like, all those things you dream about as a kid growing up in Cleveland. That kind of ran its course, as these things do, and then I was just kind of messing around with different things, and I started writing for television in New York, and then through that, like, my friend Tony Carnevale had a show, like, in the back of Parkside Lounge on Houston, and I just went and read from my, like, journal. I just would, like, write a journal every day, and I read that on stage, and then that kind of started, and that was, like, 2005. And then it's just kind of an accidental career comedy, just from being an idiot and entertaining myself. And I think that was just the lesson I learned, and that I would advise anybody, is just, like, kind of just have fun and do what you want to do. And when you don't really put any expectations on it, then things come of it. I think when you, like, are precious about stuff and be like, oh, I want, because wanting something doesn't really do much for anything, you know, just doing shit is what makes shit happen, you know?
Sure.
It's like, you just have to do stuff. It doesn't matter. So, like, if deep in your heart, you're like, oh.
So at what point were you able to kind of jump off and turn comedy into a career?
Started in 2005. And then I was very lucky. It went kind of quickly, because I was, like, you know, I was messing around with video, and then I was putting videos on YouTube and stuff, and started doing a show, like, kind of a talk show type thing called the Daveville Explosion at Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
Yeah.
And through that, you know, probably after, like, a year of doing that, then, like, I don't know, probably, yeah, probably, like, I was probably doing comedy, like, less than 2 years when I got approached about doing, like, a TV pilot, and then that became a TV show called King of Miami that came out in 2007 on a no longer existing network called the Mojo Network. And
I remember that.
The beginning of my career, like, kind of went fast, where I was like, oh, you know,
I guess I have something here.
Yeah, but, you know, I've had a career ever since, but it hasn't, you know, I'm not, like, a massive household name, or, you know, I make a nice living, but I'm not, like, don't have houses all over the place. So I have sort of a nice career, but it's been, you know, I've just been able to fortunately just consistently work over the years, and hopefully that'll, I mean, I guess, you know, as I get older, I kind of go, like, well, it's been going this long, like, whatever, I'll be dead soon enough. I'll just keep going, you know, even though my dad, just last week, I had dinner with him, and he was some magazine he reads, like, had an ad for an intern in the back, $15 an hour, and it's in New York. And he's like, hey, you should think about, should get a hold of them. Cause I think he's always wanted me to, like, get, like, some proper job where I you know, work somewhere.
I mean, there's an actual Seinfeld episode about this.
Oh, was there one?
Yeah, where, like, Morty is trying to get Jerry to join, like, the management development program at a department store.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's pretty much a constant thing. Like, my mom, she's been gone for, like, almost 13 years now. But in, like, the last 6 months of her life, she called me and was like, oh, my friend saw you on HBO last night. And she's like, that's good, right? And I was like, oh, she's finally, like, getting, like, what I do. I'm like, yeah, you know, I think it's pretty good. And then there's, like, this pause, and she goes, what's HBO? Like, she truly didn't know. I mean, she never had an email address, you know?
Yeah. That's like the band my father is the proudest that I work with is A Flock of Seagulls.
I mean, now I'm proudest of you for that, too, now that I've heard it.
I don't know. I was like, Dad, I work with fucking, like, real, like, Bethlehem.
I don't, yeah, parents, they need, like, something that relates to their life on some level, you know?
Sure.
I write books, and I think, like, 90% of the reason I write books is just so I can be like, Dad, here, I wrote this. He can hold it in his hand, you know?
Yeah,
he, like, he'll look and be like, oh, I've heard of this publisher. I know what this is.
There you go. So during the pandemic, you started doing a few video series, probably on TikTok and Instagram and whatever. And I actually was looking before this, and I didn't realize how much your Instagram had blown up since you and I have become friends. Although we've been friends since, I think, maybe right before Instagram was even a thing.
Yeah, I think I've known you now.
Like almost a decade.
I met you. You were such a pretty young thing when I met you.
I know.
No, you were like unfathomably young, I remember.
Yeah.
As was I, but you know.
But I was like really young, yes.
You were really young. I met you at the Housecore Festival, yeah.
So over the pandemic, you start a few series. The one that seems to have really taken off is your townie punk series.
Yeah.
Where you ride around town on your very small bike and threaten townie punks. Talk to me about this.
You know, like a lot of people, like during the pandemic, my girlfriend and I, we went to visit her mother for what we thought was going to be like 3 weeks in like a small town outside of Cleveland in Ohio. And, you know, we just locked our apartment and, you know, we kept our apartment the whole time. And we just thought like, oh, we're going to be going back home. But we ended up being, you know, stayed with her mom for like a year. And, there was just no one in this town. Like, you literally wouldn't see anyone. Like, you might see one car. You might see someone walking, like, 100 yards away. My girlfriend's brother loaned me his bike, or one of his bikes, and I would just ride around this town every day. And then I was, like, losing my mind, and I started just, like, imagining, you know, like, my enemies in the town, like, these the townie punks, like kids who would, you know, who would want to like get into trouble with me. And so, of course, but I never ever saw anybody. I would just imagine this. And then I started making these videos where I would threaten to fight them.
What was the origin? You have a, I think it's an eagle cry that you do.
Oh yeah. Like, caw-caw, caw-caw.
Yeah. What was the origin of that concept?
I think, like, you know, when I was a kid, kids would do it like as like a way to call to each other from, you know, from one backyard to like another backyard, like five houses down, you know. We used to do stupid stuff like this, or like the big kids did. I don't know if I ever really did, but that was what just my memory was, is just like kids like calling to each other.
Kids make bird noises at each other.
Yeah, around my block growing up. So that's, yeah, I just remember that and would do that. Like I was calling out to the townie punks, let them know I was coming. So
it's such an absurd series that, like, brought me a lot of joy during the pandemic. I remember there's a line you have in there about, like, you want to squish their melons with your fists and how that feels actually a little too sexual.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I did so many of them. I mean, like, I wouldn't really put much thought into it. I would just, like, kind of...
Well, that's what made it so good, was you could tell it was just you as enemy of the townie punks. Does that character have a name?
I guess just Dave Hill. I don't know. I mean, just my name. I don't know.
Just, this is what Dave Hill does when he's not with you.
Yeah, I just started doing that. It's kind of funny, like, it's just easier also to make videos like in a small town in Ohio. So I tend to, even when I go back there now, I'd probably make more videos than when I'm home in New York. And like, so a lot of people, you know, especially as you mentioned, like with my Instagram growing and like these new people, a lot of people think that I live in this little town. And then now when I post stuff in New York, people in New York will be like, "You're here? What are you doing here? Or are you performing?" I'm like, yeah, I've been living and performing here for like 20 years now, you know?
Yeah, this is in fact who I am.
Yeah, but, yeah, and then, but I don't know, I'm tempted to just move back there to Ohio because, no, I mean, I won't, but like they've got a lot of the people in the town now know who I am from the videos. So when I ride my bike around town, like people will wave to me and stuff. It's kind of grown. So
you've become a hometown hero of a town that is not your home.
Yeah, exactly. When I'm there, people get psyched. So, you know, I'll take it. Any attention in any form, I'll take it, you know.
I understand. I work with musicians.
Yeah. It's just pretty much the look at me business.
So how has the return to the stage been for you?
I mean, it's been fun in some ways, but like not, you know, that it hasn't been like, oh my God, it's so great to be back. I've missed this so much, you know. I mean, probably more than half of me is like a huge introvert who has no interest in being on stage whatsoever. And I've just kind of I know that when I'm on stage, I like it, you know, but I hate the idea of it all the whole rest of the time. Like last night I did the set here in New York and I was on stage for 15 minutes and leading up to it, I was sitting there. You know, I showed up at the club, was waiting to go on. All I was doing was sitting there thinking like, oh my God, fucking hate this. I want to quit. I should quit and cancel all my upcoming tour dates. And then I go on stage and I had like a really great time. And then I walked home and I was like, oh, that was really fun. You know, and that's
this
like
is okay.
Over. Yeah, it's literally every single time. Like my girlfriend is so sick of it. She's like, she's like, it's beating on you, but it's just as bad for me because you put me through it. Because you like skulk around the apartment, like dreading, you know, this or that. And then you're like, oh, it was great. It was packed and this and that, you know. But so in that way, I'm just saying, it's sort of just come back to be the same where I'm like, I dread it, but I know that I like it when it's happening. And then shortly after,
you have to throw yourself in.
It's like sex, you know, what it's, you know, the thought of it, I hate it. But you know, when it's happening,
God,
like,
another person near me. Ugh.
Yeah. But then you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I stopped off at the bus station today. But I don't know. No. But it's been good though. Like I've been touring a lot, probably almost more than ever. In the last year.
Well, you just did like a bunch of dates in Finland, right?
Well, I did two in Finland. My next book is about hockey. So I went there. The main reason I went there was to see hockey games, pro Finnish hockey games, and then pretend I was in an Aki Kaurismäki movie. But then I figured like as long as I was going there, I should book a few shows. And I really just wanted to do like, you know, 10 minutes one night just to be like, oh, I did perform in Finland. And then I got in touch with a comedian over there, Harri Sinilja, a hilarious guy. And he was like, oh, I can get you. So I did an hour in Helsinki and an hour in Tampere. So it was super fun. And, but like the same thing, like it was really fun to do, but there's also like, I think when you have like an hour show looming over your head, the day is at least partially ruined because all day long you're thinking like, oh, I got to get up and talk for an hour in front of a bunch of people. But it was fun. And it's I think performing is a great way to meet people. I mean, performing with comedy is way better than in terms of like seeing places, like when you're touring with a band, as you know, it's like basically, oh, I'm driving around with these 4, 5, 20, however many people are in your thing and you're not really seeing anything. And then you show up, maybe you can sneak out and check something out for a little bit, but probably not. And then even when you do, you get like have this conversation like with all these, oh, what do you want to do? Oh, you have to go buy socks? Oh, okay. But when you do it as a comedian, it's just you. So like, it's really fun and you can meet people and like, you don't have like a bunch of gear that you get to worry about, you know?
Yeah, and everything just takes longer when you're with a band, I feel.
Yeah. It's not the best way. I get, like, as Tom Araya said, or Araya, however you say it, said, like, he's been all over the world, but he really hasn't seen anything in his entire career, because he's just, like, it's hotel rooms and shows. But that's why I started running, though, because I played guitar in Walter Schreifel's band, Walter from Quicksand and Gorilla Biscuits and all that.
Yeah.
I played in his solo band for a few years, and we would go on tour, and he would go running every day. And then so I started just coming along with him, and it's how I got into running. But it was also like how I learned, like, oh, like, this is like a great way to see a new city, because you're just out running around. It's also, you're moving faster than you're walking. So, like, now whenever I travel, I go running, you know, mostly for, like, my mental health. But also, like, you cruise around, you're like, oh, that coffee shop looks cool, I'm going to come back here later. This restaurant looks good. You know, it's like a quick...
Sure. Like, you feel like you can sort of do the thing a little bit more.
Yeah. So I think that's a good good thing I learned from Walter, as a way to, like, at least see and do something in every city. Even if you have very, you know, even if you only have, like, a half hour, you just go for a run around town.
No, absolutely. Because there's definitely entire countries I've been to multiple times that I don't know anything about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Belgium. Barely know anything. I've been running in Belgium, but that's about it.
So, looking forward, what are you excited about? What has you thinking about the future?
Finishing up a new Valley Lodge record now. And then
that's cool.
In a few weeks, I'm going to get together with Chris Reifert. We're going to hang out, and who knows, we might, maybe we'll do another Painted Owl record. Not when we hang out, but maybe the seeds of that will come together. So at the very least, I'm looking forward to seeing him and his wife, Nancy, and, you know, eating some food. And let's see, next week I go to Seattle and Portland with Puddle's Pity Party, if you know him. He's amazing. Yeah. If you don't know him, go on YouTube now, and you'll become a fan instantly, like I did, I think. And and then I have a new book coming out in the fall of this year. So I'm excited for that. And, like, hopefully there'll be a fun tour around that. And, like, book tours are pretty, like, they're low stress relative to every other kind of touring, because you're just kind of showing up. And
it's not even at night, usually.
Talking and some, yeah, or it's like not, or it's maybe at the latest 7 o'clock. You know, so you just kind of show up and talk and sign some books and hopefully eat some nice food. So I'm looking forward to that, whatever that entails. And then, I don't know, seeing what else comes up. I don't know. Well, I'm going to do some acting, hopefully. I mean, I know I'm doing some. Hopefully I'll do more than I'm aware of right now. I'm determined to become an action movie star.
Is that an actual goal?
No. But I would... It's fun acting, like, it's not, I didn't grow up, like, you know, doing plays or, you know, I'm a wild horse, as you know, Matt. So,
yeah,
but I've been able to do some acting. A stallion from way back. So, you know, I've been able to do some, and hopefully do more. I think it's fun to do, and just, like, I just still learning. I don't really know that much about it, so I'm just kind of learning, and so I'm excited to do more of that. And I don't know, but more than anything, I like to hang out and eat food and drink some coffee and play with my dog. So really, those last bit is what I'm most looking forward to.
Not a complicated guy.
No, I'm a simpleton, really. I like to, you know, I do like to travel, but I don't like the traveling part of it.
Sure.
I like to be, like, zapped. If I could be zapped places, you know, like, I'd be zapped to Dresden, and then you and I go out and get, I don't know, some Dresden magical thing, whatever it is. I don't know. It's what's almost 6 o'clock there.
Yeah, it's 5:10. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, what is everything closed? Everything's probably closing up, and then it's shifting to the night.
Yeah, so we could go
There's a Big Lebowski themed bar around the corner. That's kind of weird.
Oh my God. See? Perfect. Get some White Russians.
Smells terrible inside, but yes.
I would assume it smells terrible. It's weird. Like, I was in Estonia a couple months ago, and there was a Depeche Mode themed bar there. They only played Depeche Mode.
Interesting.
And I wanted to do them one better. It's called Depeche Mode Bar, as you may have guessed. And then, but I want to open a bar called Personal Jesus, where we only play Personal Jesus over and over.
That's like when I did my DJ sets, I would just play Kiss.
Oh, that's a good DJ set.
Just to see how long I could go. I thought it was a good DJ set.
Yeah, would you play classic era, or would you go into like Lick It Up and all that?
Oh, I'm really into 80s Kiss. Like, I love classic era Kiss, but I think you gotta like borrow from both and then you mix it up, and
yeah,
sometimes people don't even know.
Yeah, when you just hear it, they got some jams, obviously.
You rock and roll
big time.
Anyway, are there any final things everyone should be absolutely aware of before we wrap this up?
It's really important to drink water. A lot of people aren't hydrated enough, so if I could impart any wisdom, people, I would drink a lot of water. What else? Yeah, I don't know. Go to my website, davehillonline.com. My tour dates are there. Follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Mr. Dave Hill, at Mr. Dave Hill. And this is what, I heed your advice. You're wise.
It's very kind of you.
Man, well beyond your years. But I'm really like, TikTok, it's such a cruel mistress.
Yeah, we talked about this because you were like slaughtering for a minute.
Slaughtering, and then they just pull the plug on you. And then, of course, my reaction is like, well, I'll show you. I'm going to pull the plug on you. And they're like, yeah, we don't care. So it's really, it's a cruel mistress. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just going to be out there touring and stuff, and come on out and, I don't know, read my books, find whatever point of entry into my body of work. Don't find a point of entry into my body, please.
Yeah, we've already talked about this.
Yeah, less of that in 2023. I made some cash when I really needed it, but those days are behind me.
Gonna stay away from the bus stop for a while.
Yeah, you have to.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the insights and the endless wisdom and bus stop guidance.
Yeah, sure.
So thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back next week.
All right, so that was awesome. Thank you everyone out there for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more, and above all, keep it heavy.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.